Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, but before we go on with today's episode, let me tell you about a great sponsor of the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast, and that is AutoNation. If you're looking to buy or sell a vehicle, AutoNation is where you want to go. They're the largest auto retailer from coast to coast, and their friendly and knowledgeable staff here in South Florida will help you save big on huge selection of new cars, trucks, and SUVs, Toyota, Honda, Chevrolet, Mercedes-Benz, and much, much more. If you're looking to buy pre-owned, shop AutoNation's huge selection of one-priced pre-owned vehicles. They're all clearly marked with one price, their lowest price, guaranteed. Or if you just want to get rid of that old car, turn it in for cash today. Get a top dollar offer and check the same day. They'll buy your car with no purchase necessary. Is your check engine light on? Right now, get their services you need at low AutoNation prices. Oil changes, tires, batteries, and more. All for less. Call or visit AutoNation.com to schedule your appointment today. If you are in the market for a new car, DM us at 3 Yards Per Carry. That's at the number 3 Yards Per Carry on Twitter. And I'll give you an AutoNation senior manager your info so they can reach out to you directly and walk you through the buying process. Now, on with the show.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to another edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga. I have Simon Clancy here. And I do have Chris Kaufman back from what seemed like forever. It was forever. Yeah. But he is here. He's here on the show. And this is your Dolphins training camp preview. And let's just get into it right away. Simon, we're not expecting many wins this year, but it is training camp, so anything can happen, although we don't think it can, but let's just say that it could. If it can happen, I think it's because of this unit, and that's our skill guys. I happen to like the group, and there you have it.
Don't be stupid. Come on, don't be stupid.
Let's to uproarious laughter.
Seriously, let's stop. What's wrong with the wool over people's eyes.
All right, Pollyanna. Wilson.
Christ on a bike.
All right, so how bad are these guys then, Simon?
Mate, I've been saying for months that this is one of the worst teams ever. And then finally, about 3 days ago in our WhatsApp group, you finally conceded that the talent on this team was about as good as a high school girls hockey team.
I like how he made it look spontaneous too. Like, I was looking through the roster and this team doesn't have much.
Wasn't it? It was almost like he just discovered our lads. It's like, wow, there's a depth chart and I can see who's playing. Wow, we don't have much talent, do we?
Wait, what site is that?
Well, to be clear, what I said was that this is the thinnest team I can ever remember.
For thinnest, I read shittiest. Can we just skip to the draft preview? Well, that's what people want, right?
But we get there.
I think that's what's interesting about this season, though, if there is to be anything interesting about it, is they're going to be drafting from their own roster because a lot of these guys, I mean, it's like when they say that you're shopping from your own closet. I mean, they're going to spend a season in spring training trying to figure out which guys need to be here and which guys don't.
It's the beautiful subplot, isn't it, to the season that there is this golden goose at the end of the rainbow, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's the goal. And so, people ask me, but is there, look at 2008 and what happened there. And if they went out and shopped for a bunch of these veterans that could help them translate to the new systems, then I might buy that potential. But really what they're doing, you're just seeing the dice rolls all over the place in the roster, and everything is a dice roll. Even if it's an outside guy brought in like Eric Rowe or somebody like that, it's a dice roll. We want to give them new opportunities and see if there's something there that nobody else sees. And so that's the subplot that I think is going to intrigue us and keep us going, and probably for a lot of Dolphins fans too.
Now let me get to this. Back to the skill guys. One of my favorite benchmarks is 2,000 yards. Can your running backs produce 2,000 yards from scrimmage? I'm pretty sure that Simon's going to say I'm absolutely insane, but is it absolutely crazy to say that Kenyon Drake, Kellen Ballage, and whoever else out of our backfield can't produce 2,000 yards from scrimmage?
Can't or can? Like, it's crazy to say they. It's probably crazy to say they can.
Yes. Really. Behind who? Who's blocking for them?
Well, that's the problem. Yeah.
I mean, I'm serious. So who is blocking for them? And it's not like they've got like big old behemoth blocking wide receivers and tight ends, because they don't. And up front, you're essentially, there's one solid, rock solid. I mean, Brian Baldinger called him the other day the best young left tackle in football. And I think he's right, ahead of Ronnie Stanley and Laramie Tunsil. But beyond that, there are four massive question marks on the offensive line. Who's going to block for these guys? I mean, Drake and Ballage couldn't do it behind a semi-mobile offensive line last year.
Caveat on that one, Drake. I mean, listen. Let's be fair. Let's be fair to him. He's been averaging nearly 5 yards a carry his entire 3-year career in Miami, and that's with some pretty shit offensive lines in front of him. So, to be fair, I mean, there's an argument to be made. If he gets a lot more opportunities, he could run with it. The problem is that you and I have talked about this a long time ago, going back to, you know, his college career even and some of his time in the pros, is he has a reputation as for not having the durability.
There's a reason he hasn't given all those carries. We've said this before in the program, and people complain that Adam Gase didn't give him the ball. Well, Adam Gase wanted to win. Adam Gase didn't want to be sacked. Adam Gase wanted to be the next on shooter of the Miami Dolphins. If he thought Kenyon Drake was going to help him win games, he would have given him the ball. There is a reason.
Well, if he thought that he could handle it, if he thought that he could handle the workload. But I think that there's
mentally,
he was already taking nicks and scrapes by the end of the year. I mean, more than nicks and scrapes, really. And I think that he did that a lot at Alabama. There was a reason that all those acts at Alabama kept leapfrogging him on the depth chart. That's whether you're talking about TJ Yeldon and Derrick Henry and somebody else I'm forgetting. That's his MO. That's the thing you're fighting. You know, that's the thing he's going to try to prove this year is I can handle it. Like, give me 300 touches and it's cool and I'm good. And I hope he does. I for his sake and for the Dolphins' sake, I really hope he does. But let's not pretend it wouldn't be a surprise if he did manage it.
I think the one kid that could do it is Ballage. If there's going to be,
I'm not sure I'm there on that.
I'm not sure I'm there yet, but I wonder if there is going to be somebody that emerges. Because I kind of feel like if Drake was going to really emerge, it would have happened by now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not sure there is a guy necessarily on the roster, but if one guy emerges, I feel like it could be him more than it could be the others potentially.
To me, best chance is Drake. I mean, step up and be durable and take the load the whole season and just have a real bang up year. But Kalen Ballage, you know, listen, I mean, he did go down at first contact a lot. I mean, he still had some of the issues that he had in college as far as, you know, vision in the backfield. He had his moments and he had one really big run, but
he's got to prove that he's more than that 75 yarder against the Vikings, hasn't he?
Right. Ultimately. Exactly. And then the guys, I do not rate the guys behind those two.
Kenny Farrow. Just a guy.
Now, as a reference point in all of this, last year, Ballage, Kenyon Drake, and Frank Gore did go over 2,100 yards. Now we're talking about two guys trying to do it.
Well, that was Frank Gore. They leaned heavily on Frank Gore. And quite frankly, you know, you could argue that if Frank Gore was on this roster, he'd be the best back in the backfield again. Mm-hmm. And I think he was, you know, and yeah, I get a lot of flack for that.
Just in case people are wondering, Drake and Ballage were just shy of 1,300 yards between them.
Right. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of people saying that will catch, you know, really you'll catch flack from if you say that Frank Gore was better than Kenny and Drake. But he was. I mean, if you look at his median gains and you look at how often he was caught in the backfield versus how often Kenyon Drake was caught in the backfield, he was more reliable. He was more reliable as a runner. And especially if you look at first, second down and you kind of weed out some of the third and longs where you get some garbage yards and stuff like that, Frank Gore was just better. And that surprised the hell out of me because I thought, you know, he'd be on his last legs as a pro and he was really good. But Kenyon Drake, you know, he's got an opportunity, and if he's durable, then it's going to happen, I think. But if he's because he's, like I said, he's been running for 5 yards per carry or 4.5 to 5 yards per carry behind shit offensive lines, and that's what they have this year or on paper. So that shouldn't be much of a problem. But, you know, does he last? Does he last? And does he prove that he can handle 20-plus in a game? I'm not sure.
Well, Simon, it's pretty clear that you don't think that they're going to go anywhere near 2,000 yards from scrimmage, these running backs. But what do you make of
from that? Scrimmage or just rushing?
From scrimmage. Yeah.
Well, that's a different question, though.
That's a different one, isn't it?
Well, that was the original question. That was my question. Can okay. you guys combine from two for 2,000 yards from scrimmage? Because if they do,
yes, but that is that really special? Success.
Yeah.
Does it?
That doesn't
competence.
Does it?
That's what we're trying to shoot for here.
Well, I don't know that translates to winning.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, historically, two guys combining for 2,000 yards from scrimmage has
all-purpose.
Yeah, all-purpose has usually boded well as far as winning.
This team is not going to win a lot of games whether they run for 2,000 yards or not.
Yeah, especially. I mean, they might have the commitment to the ground game and to the running backs to get some yardage that way. But I don't know that it's going to translate to winning.
Yeah, well, I think we are kidding ourselves massively.
Let's move on to our wide receivers, Simon. A couple of weeks ago, you said that this was not a complete group. I kind of like the group, except, you know, save for maybe the bottom end of the group, namely that Devontae Parker shouldn't probably be on this team.
Well, the bottom end is Preston Williams, and we all love him.
I think that by the end of the year, Devontae Parker is probably going to be on the bottom end. I think Preston Williams is probably an ascending player. Remember, it's a brand new – it's a clean slate, I think, for these coaches. So
I think he could – I'm on the opposite side. I'm really have criticized him since they took him. Mm-hmm. But – I'm on the opposite side of that. If you look at this offense and the way that Chad O'Shea, Josh McDaniels structures the offense and the roles of their wide receivers in this offense, you're talking about like guys like Chris Hogan and Josh Gordon, and you know, if you go back even like a Brandon LaFell, there's a very discreet role for a Devontae Parker in this. And it's no coincidence, absolutely no coincidence, that we get into spring ball and the headlines you're hearing every day are Devontae Parker. I mean, because that's not a coincidence in two ways. One, Chad O'Shea, you know, taking from Josh McDaniels, there's that role for that tall, lengthy, deep threat, like the deep post guy and, you know, that kind of guy. There's a big role for that in the offense, but also Ryan Fitzpatrick. If you look at his career, when did he succeed? Last year with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, throwing to Mike Evans and throwing to those two giant tight ends. Or when he was in the New York Jets and he had that greatest year probably of his career, he was throwing to Brandon Marshall and throwing to the other guy, who was Eric Decker. Both of them big receivers. And so I think that he favors, there's a reason that Preston Williams caught his attention. And I think that he favors those, and I think the offense favors those. So that could mean success for Devontae in a bad year.
I mean, look at the guys that are on the roster. The kid we just picked up, Saeed Blacknell, just a guy. Bryce Butler probably won't make the team. Isaiah Ford has been on the fringes for 3 years. You know, probably not going to make the team. Man. Yeah, exactly. We all like Jakeem Grant, but, you know, he's coming off an injury. You know, it's hard to figure him, you know, coming back and being dominant straight away, especially as he's, you know, with the greatest one in the world, he's still picking up the nuances of the position.
For him to really ascend, somebody's going to have to take a leap of faith. And yeah, I'm absolutely not sure that these guys are doing it.
Agreed. Reese Horn is just a guy. I mean, they apparently really like Trenton Irwin, but he's coming off an injury. He's a free agent. You know, there's a long, that's a long path. We've just talked about Parker, who could be anything, but probably maybe history
zero
tells us that.
Yeah, zero exactly. To hero, right?
We love Kenny Stills. We all love Kenny Stills. But, you know, the acceptance is that Kenny Stills is more than just a guy, but, you know, not that much more than just a guy. We all love him. We love his commitment. We love what he stands for. But, you know, let's be realistic. In the better offenses, Kenny has struggled. 2 years ago was his best year, of course. Preston Williams were all massively high on. And Albert Wilson, again, a guy that we really liked last year, but coming off a serious injury, you know. He looks like he's got a long weight to shift. You look at him on Instagram and stuff. He's a big human being currently. There's still work there to be done. I mean, it's just a group of guys. It's not, you know, there doesn't seem to be a lot of cohesion. There doesn't seem to be a lot of, you know, I could probably pick five guys. If you were to pick five guys now who are going to make the team, you'd pretty much say Grant, Parker, Stills, Williams, Wilson, which is fine.
Oh, go ahead.
Go on, Chris. No, go on, Chris.
I was going to say, I'll make this an open question. From this group, which guy is your go-to on third down, your slot receiver type that are so famous in New England, Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola, Wes Welker, which of the guys on this roster is that type of player?
I think that Albert Wilson will find himself much more in that role than some people think he will be in.
I think they'll lean a lot on Stills because of his mental ability, his leadership. He's got good hands. I think ultimately, but I think those two of the guys that we've said, I think it'll be those two guys. I think Preston Williams and Devontae will battle out to become the Randy Mosses, the Irving Fryer, right, that kind of New England, because their size and physicality. And I think, you know, the other three guys are those guys that you'll try and work those short underneath routes that, you know, have been made so famous for years by the guys like Welker and Edelman and all those kind of guys. So, but
we've talked many times about how Kenny Stills is good from the slot, right? And how his numbers are good from the slot, but he doesn't run the same routes from the slot to get those numbers. He runs deeper stuff from the slot. That's how he ends up with such great efficiency numbers. It's not the same as getting Danny Amendola or Wes Welker or Julian Edelman. And so I'm wondering, you know, between the guys you mentioned, Kenny Stills and Albert Wilson, or let's throw a Jakeem Grant in there, you know, are they all just kind of misfit a little bit for that role? Are they, you know, not quite hitting it square? You know what I mean? And I wonder, and since that's such an important element, or has been, I mean, we're going off in New England's offense and it's all we have to go on. And I'm sorry for that, but, you know, it's been such a big element of the New England offense. I wonder if the fact that we don't have like an immediately obvious fit for that kind of role, if that will matter or not. I don't know.
Trenton Irwin could be that guy.
I could see it.
I could absolutely see him.
And not just because he's white and not.
No. But it's true. And we talked about it for the very first time when we first heard that the Dolphins were sniffing around him.
Absolutely.
At Stanford, we were all like, this could be the guy that could run those routes, that could be that guy, not, like you say, not just because he's a white fella, but it definitely could be the one. If he is healthy and you could see him making the team, potentially could be the, you know, if they keep six receivers, feels like he might just be the guy.
Yeah, I did a workup on him almost immediately when his name came up, and you know, at Stanford he did run a lot of those kind of verticals, like he was the fast guy on the team. But where he really lit up and where he started to see something interesting is when he was running those man beaters. He was running man beaters against tight man coverage and, you know, shake routes and stuff like that, or double moves, and, you know, things where he's really got to beat the guy in front of him with his quickness, and his, you know, his shoulder fakes and his leverage and things like that. And that's where you see him light up. I'm not sure I see him as being like a zone guy, you know, that's going to do something that's going to impress you with finishing the catch through contact or doing anything, or even doing things running after the catch. I see him a lot like a Brian Hartline, actually.
Yeah. I tell you what, I thought he did really well when I saw him on tape. The three things I thought he did really well is he does a lot of, and you watch the Patriots receiver, he does a lot of stutter moves rather than run what we would call conventional routes. He does a lot of those short areas, stutter step, shaking the shoulder, shaking the head, turning back to the quarterback, getting open 6 yards, first down, that kind of thing.
That man beater kind of stuff.
Absolutely, just like you said, that kind of quickness. The second thing is double moves. A lot of double moves I saw that he ran and would get himself open. And the third is that he's just really, really sure-handed, especially in that underneath traffic, that kind of, you know.
I think he had one drop all year.
Absolutely, that kind of sharp eye, laser eye focus to work across the middle and concentrate and keep, you know, seeing the ball into his hands. That for me just makes me think that's why they went to see him, and they felt like he could be a guy that could potentially return punts and could potentially work that inside role.
Yeah,
who would surprise you, Alf? Oh, go ahead.
If minicamp is any indication, I think that Jakeem Grant's going to surprise a lot of us, because You know, the policy this year is that, you know, you can't say anything. And if you do, they rip your eyes out. So you can't watch the next practice. But if you watched minicamp, the guy who seemed to be the most active as far as in every single formation and pretty much every play was Jakeem Grant. And he played almost everywhere on that field, including
running. I'd love it. I'd love that.
Okay. Now, I was thinking the other day, maybe this was a complete head fake, and this is because Albert Wilson wasn't healthy for minicamp. And that kind of scares me because I kind of like what I saw. You know, Jakeem Grant lined up at running back at basically everywhere. He was lined up, including quarterback at one point. I'm pretty sure that.
Oh, man, they're going to kill you for saying that.
Okay. So that's something that I would be interested in seeing.
But nice knowing you, buddy.
Yeah, nice.
I don't think any of this is going to work unless these guys up front.
And it's not going to work now that you've told everybody.
Yeah, that's right.
And where we're going with this is these guys up front. If you look at this offensive line, okay, they're bringing back Daniel Kilgore. I guess their evaluation is that, like ours was. Like, we would probably, I don't know, we would have gone out to try to replace him. Let's just say that.
I was optimistic about him last year. I just didn't like the way he played.
So was I. Yeah, and it was kind of, I don't know. He just.
But also, you've got to look at Kilgore. You've got to look at it not just as a snaps per or performance per snap. You've got to look at it as this isn't, you know, like I just said 10 minutes ago, you've got Laremy Tunsil and four other positions. To have somebody in the middle who can understand, you know, as a veteran in the league, he's not, you know, he's an average starter at best, but he understands, you know, where people are supposed to line up. He understands calls. He understands, you know, him and Tunsil will be talking to Dieter if Dieter starts at left guard. It's just having that veteran presence in the middle as that guy that can just be a leader and can understand about what he's seeing and what's happening and point that out to the guys and get everybody in. I think that's important, especially to, and I know we're talking so much about a New England coach, but those things do matter to these kind of coaching staffs, to have somebody who can just be that plonk, that veteran presence in the middle. And he can hold up generally, you know, as an average starter, but he brings a bit more cerebrally to the game. I think they're going to find that they lean on a little bit more than perhaps we as fans expect. But actually, as coaches, I think they appreciate that more than we would ever do, because that goes a little bit further than, you know, maybe a guy who's a little bit better starter, but, you know, who's a new guy or whatever.
I fully agree with you, but I think the bottom drops out when you consider the fact that, you know, now he earns, yeah, but he's earned the injury prone label now.
Yeah.
I mean, because he came into the league with serious injuries and multiple years. It was really, I think, one injury, but, you know, it affected him in multiple years, how he could play and whether he could play. And now he's getting that sort of, I mean, the triceps, I think it was a triceps tear, right? You know, it's the sort of thing you get when you're getting old and over the hill, I think, as an offensive lineman, to me. And so, but he is the smart player, and he's going to be the swing man and help everybody else. And then he's going to miss 10 games. And then what? You know, then we're what, Ryan Anderson? I don't know. So, yeah, I think that's where the bottom drops out, is he's injury prone, in addition to not having been all that compelling when he did play. And so that's going to be tough. That's going to be a really tough part of the offensive line to me. But the right tackle spot is, I brought this up with you guys earlier, the right tackle spot is really where it's at, and with this offensive line. I think that's going to make or break this offensive line. Because I kind of like Jesse Davis. So I won't hide it. I always have. And I think that he played all right for like a game and a half at right tackle when he played there against the Carolina Panthers and Tampa Bay Bucks in 2017. But, you know, look at the guys that he's going to be going against, or you know, worse, if it's Jordan Mills at right tackle, or Zach Stirrup. I mean, and I put this list together. This is great. This is okay. So we'll start with like week one, and we'll go all the way through. He's got Matthew Judon and Tyus Bowser and Fernell McPhee, but then he's got Lawrence Guy, Michael Bennett, you know, of course, Dont'a Hightower, and the rest of those New England boys. DeMarcus Lawrence, Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram, Okay. Matt Ioannidis and Ryan Caron and Montez Sweat. Lorenzo Alexander's no slouch. TJ Watt, Cameron Hayward, Leonard Williams, Justin Houston. He's got to face Justin Houston and Jabal Sheard. And then Miles Garrett and Olivier Vernon. Great. Thanks. Brandon Graham. Oh, the legend. Awesome. And Marcus Golden and Carlos Dunlap and Sam Hubbard. And then the New England boys again and the Jets boys again and the Buffalo boys again. I mean, you have a group of Joey Bosa, DeMarcus Lawrence, Brandon Graham, TJ Watt, and Justin Houston, Miles Garrett, Olivier Vernon. And that's a heavy group.
There might be 300 career sacks on that list.
It's immense. It's immense. It's incredible. And let's not forget about Michael Bennett just coming over from New England and Lawrence Guy. I mean, it's an incredible group to be going against with that right side being shaky.
And don't even get started on the defensive tackles that the interior morons have got to go up against. You know,
yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean,
look at week one. You get straight off the bat with what's his name? Brandon Williams. You know, one of the best big men in the NFL. You got Michael Pierce and the kid they drafted from A&M, Daylon Mack. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to get ugly quickly for that line.
It very well could.
It's such a cliche in football, but games really
are Atkins won again
in the trenches. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, let me ask you guys this, and right before we go to break, let me ask you, Simon. Obviously, we're trying to get this – well, not us, but Chris Greer and company, they're trying to get this team onto a trajectory toward the playoffs. And let's say in 2 years, let's say 2021 is the year they expect to be in the playoffs. Do you see more than Laremy Tunsil? Because I think we all agree that Laremy Tunsil, we expect him to be here for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. Do you see another offensive lineman on this team that could start on the 2021 offensive line?
I think one of them.
Yeah, Michael Dieter potentially. The rest, no.
For me, it would be either Chris Reed or Jesse Davis could survive to that point in time. But Dieter, I mean, we'll see. But
I mean, Dieter's only because they clearly liked something in him to have taken him at that, you know. But, I mean, that's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Yeah.
Do you guys like anybody as far as what's behind these guys, as far as Deion Calhoun, Isaiah Prince? Can any of them?
I think if Shaq Calhoun can play in any way close to how he looked like he might have been able to play at times, then you kind of think, okay, there might be something there. But look, I mean, if Kilgore goes down, then it's Ryan Anderson or Tony Adams guy. Oh, you know, God. The backup guards are Shaq Calhoun, Michael Dunn, Kyle Fuller. No, he's not very good. And then, and Chris's guy, Chris Reed. And then the tackles are Sterup, a Prince, who looks like he's got a long way to go, but could kick inside, Montero. Jordan Mills, who's just looked dreadful in spring, Jared Jones-Smith, and then
I think he's actually one to watch, Jared Jones-Smith. I think if you're talking long term, I could see him settling into being the swing guy backup. I'm not going to get ahead of myself and say he's a starter somewhere, but I could see him being the swing backup. He's played left and right. He's got an immense wingspan, the biggest wingspan I've ever seen on an offense, and that's saying something on an offensive tackle. I think he's got the capability to be a swing backup in the long term. I think Chris Reed right now is legitimately OL number four on the team. And it wouldn't surprise me if he is, you know, our best shot at a long-term starter. But there's clearly work to do. I think Shaq Calhoun, I'm with you on that 100%. I think that was like a draft pick. And I look forward to seeing what he can do because he's very athletic and he's also very powerful. It's a good combination for him. So he could even be the right guard starter this year if things have to shuffle a certain way.
If you thought the offensive line was bad, wait till we get to the defensive line, which will happen after we take this little break.
Hey, it's Seth Levitt here from the Fish Tank with my main man,
OJ McDuffie, the Juice.
And Juice, we've got a special guest over the next 2 weeks in the tank.
What's up, everybody? It's Pat Surtain, and I'm officially diving into the Fish Tank. If he was better than Peyton, he definitely wasn't better than me. That's where we're going with it.
Did you and Peyton ever play against each other in high school?
Absolutely. Beat him 35-7.
35-7. Wow. Get out of here.
Oh, yeah. I had 3 rushing and 2 passing on him, accounting for all 5 touchdowns.
Out of hands in all of them.
Yeah.
Hey, Pat came in here saying he doesn't remember stuff, but he remembered
I remember that.
Make sure you dive into the tank to hear our entire interview with Patrick Surtain here on the 5 Reasons Sports Network. You can catch up on what you've missed and hear new episodes every 2 weeks until July by searching The Fish Tank on Apple Music, Google Play, Podbean, Spotify, or wherever else you find your favorite podcasts.
Josh Darrow here, host of the 5 Rings podcast, where it's always a Canes thing, on the 5 Reasons Sports Network. What are we about? Pretty easy. I want to tell stories, and I want to share the journey for the players and coaches, past and present, affiliated with the University of Miami. Take Manny Diaz. He grew up in Miami. He grew up going to the Orange Bowl.
It was, you know, it was all those 1980s teams. You know, that's where it all started for me. And just the style of play and really, it really took hold when Jimmy Johnson was here, and, you know, sitting there in the Orange Bowl in 86 when we were whipping Oklahoma, and just, you know what I mean, just speed and then violence, you know what I mean? We're not only, you know, Nebraska, it was a changing of college football.
It's those kind of memories we want to share with you. Listen, subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate the support. The 5 Rings Podcast, where it's always a Canes thing, and we're always a part of the 5 Reasons Sports Network.
Welcome back to 3 Yards Per Carry. It is our training camp preview show. I'm Simon Fancy, as I'm sure you know by now, and I'm joined, as always, by Alfredo Arteaga and Chris Kaufman. We are a Miami Dolphins podcast, in case you literally just accidentally come across us. We are looking at the defensive line of the Miami Dolphins, which probably shouldn't take too long because it is literally a car crash. I think I might get a game if I, you know, one of us might get a game, frankly. I mean, Alf's going to training camp. He's probably most likely to get a game. I mean, it's definitely down between him and Deval Quiroz Neto or Joey Mabou or Dwayne Hendricks.
Although one of the three of us has been on a professional football team.
That's a good question.
that's our trivia question. You're gonna leave me.
Who was it?
You're gonna leave me hanging on that
what
one.
What was the
nobody's
team?
Nobody's gonna take it up.
No.
Nobody's gonna take it out.
No. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Let's start at outside. I mean, let's start systematically because we don't quite know how it's going to work, but.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be a pure 3-4 as we, you know, as we imagine it, with 3 down linemen and 4 linebackers? Is it going to be a hybrid? Is it going to be a 4-3? How do we think it's going to play out? And therefore, we might be able to mix and match some of the pieces that we see, you know, because we know Christian Wilkins is going to play fairly, you know, consistently. We know that I'm pretty sure that Vincent Taylor is going to play pretty consistently. Devon Godchild is going to play pretty consistently. Beyond that, it's literally pick 'em between Tank Carradine, Charles Harris, Nate Orchard, Adolphus Washington, and Jonathan Woodard.
I get the feeling they're going to feature Charles Harris a little bit and really give him a shot.
I think Woodard's going to play a lot too, actually.
He has the potential to play. He's going to compete with Tank Carradine, and we'll see how that comes up. But I really get the feeling, you know, because – Charles Harris was the first round pick. I don't think Chris Greer's ready to let that go. And I think that, you know, Flores is probably, they're pretty tight. They're on the same page with one another. So I think that they're going to do their best to try and see what he's got, whether he's got anything. And there are rumors that it's going to be a little bit more 3-man fronts than 4-man fronts. And that makes perfect sense to me because as I think about the primary pass rush types that are on the team, whether it's Charles Harris or Nate Orchard or, you know, the guy that they just drafted, Andrew Van Ginkle, or the 2 AAF players that they just picked up, Jayron Elliott being probably my favorite pure pass rusher for the team, period. You know, I think that they're all stand up guys. They're all would be more comfortable with their, out of a 2-point stance. And so I think that they're going to modify the front a lot so that they're, even when it is ultimately a 4-3 look or a 4-3 set of assignments, I think that there's going to be a guy standing up over one end. And I think that's going to be Charles Harris most of the time, but maybe Jayron Elliott gets in there on pass rush snaps, or the other guy, Tyrone Holmes, who has a little bit more versatility than Jayron Elliott. You know, he could get in there. He's more in the mode, like, if you're going to roll the dice and hope that you come up with a New England style linebacker, which is a guy that can pass rush and just be a play like a linebacker, like a Koamisi. Tyrone Holmes is more your guy from that AAF crew, and Andrew Van Ginkle, the guy that they drafted. But yeah, they're going to feature Charles Harris. I just don't think it's going to come out well.
Yeah. They've got a feature on there.
Well, this was my complaint about the draft. We felt, all of us felt, at least in all the podcasts leading up to the draft, that they needed more defensive backs if they wanted to play any of these coverages that they played in New England.
Sure.
They drafted none of them.
Nope.
We all knew that they needed an edge player because, you know, when you have none, you kind of need at least one.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't take one either.
Well, they got Van Ginkle, and we'll see. You know,
well, if you're drafting fifth round, that late, you know.
Yeah.
I don't
fifth round, and we'll see.
I don't think you're participating in the urgency I'm talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. It wasn't urgent, clearly.
Like, remember what we talked about in our preview shows? I said, you know, our first three picks, two of them have to be a defensive back and an edge player. Remember?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we ended up using one of them on a quarterback. But, you know, that's for later on in the show.
No, we're not going to get into that this time.
Yeah, this group, if – minicamp was any indication, they seem to think that Nate Orchard is going to play some snaps because he played a whole bunch of snaps.
Which is telling, right? Because they just picked him up.
Yes. So if you just picked up a guy and he's now taking up all the snaps when everybody else is pretty much available in minicamp, then they're searching. Mm-hmm. And I think they're probably going to look for ways to try to hide these guys. And I don't know how you hide defensive ends. Because you still have to fill and spill, right? So, So is this just going to be one of those things where our defensive ends are going to be really, really, really noticeable? Especially because people think about defensive ends and they're like, okay, you know, the sexy stuff, you know, get after the quarterback, get sacks, you know, big sack totals, 10, 12, 15 sacks. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about giving 200 yards rushing per game.
But it's never been a massive thing for Patriots defensive ends, has it? Beyond Chandler Jones, really.
Right.
About the fans. Like the fans look at the defensive ends and they're like, okay, where's the pass rush coming to?
But I'm worried
about giving up 200 yards rushing per game is what I'm worried about.
Yeah, but look, I think you only have to look, you know, and I say this with the best will in the world, but I think you only have to look at the reaction when people thought that we were going to sign the Patriots defensive end who went to Detroit.
Trey Flowers.
Trey Flowers. And people talk about his sack totals are terrible. He's rubbish. He's not worth it. That comes from people who only look at statistics. That comes from people who see the box score.
Statistics, too.
Yeah. He had 5 sacks this season. He's terrible. Boo. He should have had 15 sacks. He was a good defense. That's not what the New England Patriots defense has ever been about, beyond Chandler Jones, who was a complete outlier. You know, it was about understanding run fits. It was about setting the edge. It was about all those things that he did, rushing from the inside, moving around, being a versatile piece. There's a reason he's a really, really good player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's a reason why he would only really work in a Matt Patricia defense or a Brian Flores defense or a, you know, and that's why Miami went hard after him and that's why Detroit went hard after him, because they know that systematically he fits. So what you're not going to see is, you know, even if Charles Harris is fantastic, you're not going to see him racking up 15 sacks, because that's just not what he will be asked of. What I suspect you will see is strong defensive ends who try and set the edge, turn the play inside, and I think there'll be a much bigger reliance on potentially McMillan, but I certainly think the kid from Ohio State who we drafted last year, I think there's going to be a huge reliance on his athletic ability, both going forwards and backwards, Jerome Baker. I think you're going to be looking at guys like that who are going to be making a difference or trying to make a difference in the backfield. I don't necessarily think that will come from the play of anybody that's listening who thinks, you know, our defensive ends are going to be critical because they need to get 10 sacks each, you're in for a big disappointment. But what you might see if you scrape beneath the surface and look beyond the box score, you might see a bit more solid play in the sort of fundamentals of edge setting, run defending, turning plays inside, and hoping that linebacker group and the young, you know, look, three good young defensive tackles there, Taylor, Wilkins and Godshaw. You're hoping that those guys make plays, and then that really does leave it for the guys at the second level to come in and try and cause a bit of disruption, you know, in the backfield.
But here's why I doubt this group, and this is because New England has been so good at one thing with their defensive linemen over the years. They've been really good at acquiring, like, other teams might not rate the guys, but when you really look at it, they're good at beating the hell out of offensive linemen. They're brutal, physically brutal. Like, they beat up offensive linemen. They give them a hard time. They put them off balance. They're able to use their hands. They're able to get around them. And they might not do it, you know, always in time to get the sack, but they give offensive linemen a hard time. We don't have a physically impressive, lengthy, dominant, strong group on this defensive front. I mean, Charles Harris is not that. And if you look at some of the guys, like, even, I mean, Devon Godshaw can come in pretty heavy handed, but it was in a different system. And we'll, you know, now we're in a read and react system, not a go all out from the snap system. So we're going to see how that looks in this system. And we're going to see how it looks with Vincent Taylor in this new system, and where it's all read and react. New England was always good. I mean, Danny Shelton, I mean, for as slow as he is brutal as far as his strength and his hand use and being able to put linemen off balance and really beat the hell out of them. And I think that's what you get with a Lawrence Guy. That's why Lawrence Guy was so perfect coming over from, I believe it was Jacksonville. I mean, if you really looked at what he was, you know, you might not have seen it, had the vision for it, but you knew what he was good at. And so I think that until we acquire those guys on this team, then it might be rough. It might be really rough. And we're just going to have to see if some of them, I guess, surprise us a little bit. Right now, I think the only guy that I think that I'd count on to be able to pass rush, well, Christian Wilkins, of course, let's caveat him, because this is why we drafted him, right? Hmm. So he could be that kind of guy. But elsewise, I'm not sure anybody other than, I know people laugh, but Jayron Elliott, the guy we got from the AAF, at least I know what he can do as far as being a pure edge rusher and kind of putting an egg timer on the quarterback that way in certain situations.
Would not surprise me to see Derek Rivers end up at the Dolphins. I've heard he struggled a lot with the Patriots, the third round pick they got last year. Inactive, he was injured, but then inactive for the rest of the season. He was healthy scratch. Would not surprise me if he didn't make the team and he ended up as a Dolphin.
Yeah, they could claim him.
Yeah, absolutely. The Youngstown State kid.
Okay, now let's talk about my favorite unit on this team, meaning that I think, you know, I said today on Twitter, I put it out there that this could be a make it or break it year for Raekwon McMillan, and let me explain myself. Whenever you have a new system in place, and if you look back at the guys who've played the mic for the New England Patriots, it seems to be a very important position. If Raekwon McMillan is terrible this year, they will seek to replace him. Okay? So I think this unit, I don't know. Jerome Baker, is that the only guy that they could possibly keep? If everything goes sideways, is Jerome Baker the only guy worth keeping through the year to next year? Simon?
I mean, I thought he had a solid second half of the season, McMillan. He looked like the game slowed down a little bit for him.
Definitely.
You know, and he started to be in the right place at the right time and make plays and just look a bit more like he wasn't running in treacle, which tends to be what happens to young linebackers who are sort of overwhelmed by responsibility and, you know. I thought he made a difference, Chris. I don't know what you think. I thought he made a difference in the red zone defensively last year. You know, him and Minka Fitzpatrick certainly, I thought, seemed to make a difference there.
Yeah, I know the couple of plays you're thinking about too. Like,
yeah, absolutely. And I just think it, you know, I think he's a potentially, in a sense, this will be a fascinating year for him because it looks like he was getting it towards the end of the season. So now is this the, you know, is this the time where he really puts the pedal to the metal in this defense with a, you know, and we've heard rumors that he's, you know, Alf, you will know more, though you might not be able to say more, but we've heard rumors that he's the Dante Hightower type character. Mm-hmm. Is that really going to be the case? We shall find out. But he's certainly got the physical tools. And it felt like towards the end of the season, he was picking up the mental tools. So we shall see. It's a big year for him because actually it's not just a big year for him because he's a good player, but it's a big year for him because of the responsibility that he will hold in the center of that defense.
I think it's going to be a big year for him production wise and for, you know, in terms of the grading and everything. I think just as you said, he had a good finish in the areas that he's good in, like, you know, against the run in particular. He did really well last year. And because of that, he's going to fit into this defense. I mean, there's roles in this defense for guys like Alandon Roberts and Juwan Bentley, you know, in New England. So they don't all have to be Dante Hightower and Kyle Van Noy. So he's going to make an impact that way. The New England, what they asked their linebackers, if you want to step up and be a 1,000 snap guy as a linebacker in New England or be a big impact guy, then the way that you do it isn't in, you know, pass coverage like a la Jerome Baker. It's going to be as a pass rusher, an outside pass rusher, in addition to being good against the run. And Raekwon McMillan, I think he can be good against the run. I've not seen the pass rush from him pretty much ever, even going back to Ohio State. So we're going to see about that. And just like we're going to see about that with Jerome Baker, and I don't see it with him either. I think that they're both a little bit miscast as far as not being able to realize full potential in this system, which is why you see them roll the dice on an Andrew Van Ginkel, who can play like a real linebacker, but also wasn't, you know, has that length and that experience as an outside pass rusher. I think that ultimately they would like a guy like that, or two guys like that actually, to be manning the defense if they had their druthers. Jerome Baker, that I'm having a little bit more hard time with. And maybe that's just because I'm not being creative enough in my thoughts about what he can do in coverage and taking the place of some of the defensive backs that New England has used over the years. Maybe that happens. But I'm not sure that I see it in the pass rush.
Don't forget, you go back to Ohio State and you look at all the kids that Urban Meyer brought in. And Raekwon McMillan was the 8th highest rated recruit in the Urban Meyer era at Ohio State. And you count in that top above him were Nick Bosa, first round, third overall pick, second overall pick. Chase Young will probably be a top 5 pick. Jeffrey Okuda, who will be a top 10 pick, top 15 pick in the draft next year, the cornerback. McMillan was the 8th pick. It was the 8th highest recruit. There is legitimate talent there. I just think, you know, and you look at the way he certainly, like we said, in the second half of the season, I thought he was a, you know, above average run defender. You know, I thought he played very well against the run.
I agree.
Can he take that next step? I think that's the critical question. And if he can, who knows? Who knows? You know, he could become an upper level linebacker in the NFL. I don't see there's any reason why he couldn't. It's whether or not he's able to transfer that, you know, that talent that he showed as a high school kid in the early years at Ohio State, seemed to plateau a little bit, got to the Dolphins, obviously got the injury, looked a little bit like he was on treacle. Second half of the season, powered on. This is the critical step for him now. This is the most critical year for him, because if he takes that step on, then there's another key to that defense moving forwards, looking ahead to 2021 and 2022, where you think we don't have to worry about that position because we've got this kid in here. And it's going to help that he's going to be in behind the three big centerpieces of that defensive line, Wilkins, Godshaw, and Taylor. Definitely. All right.
So both of you have Raekwon McMillan essentially making it and not breaking it this season.
Right.
So he's a guy.
I agree.
Now, one guy who was really, really noticeable as far as his body went under some changes, let's just say that. Jerome Baker, he looks different. At least he looked really different to me. And I stood right next to him. He looked like a different player than what he looked like last year. Last year he looked slim, sleek, muscular, but sleek. I think sleek is the word I would have used to describe his body type last year. This year, he's built like a brick shit house. Is that something or nothing?
I think it's something. As long as he's not lost the speed and explosion, you know. And also, can his body carry that extra muscle? I mean, he played 679 snaps as a rookie, which is a pretty big total. You know, he didn't get injured. And you thought, you know, with his frame, probably, what would you say, Chris? Low 220s? I mean, high 220s? Low 230s, maybe?
I'd say he might even have a hard time keeping that. He came down to 215, like, as the season, you know. And there are guys that they're just coming down as the season wears on. And that's the problem.
It was 600, what's that, 60, looking at it now, 64% of the snaps. He had 80 tackles, 3 sacks, a pick. You know, you've got to be looking for him to get closer to, what, 85%, 90% of the defensive snaps if he's really to be the guy that we think he might be. It's just, how does that weight carry over? How does that, you know, has he lost that explosion? Has he lost that sideline to sideline, that change of direction ability? That'll be really key, because I think that the defensive coaches will look at him and think, you know, there's an awful lot that we can do here. You know, there's talent in an awful, you know, going backwards and forwards and sideways. And, the staff, from what you hear, and Alf, again, you'll know better than most, but, you know, I think quietly they are very happy with what they have in Baker. And, you know, he is a very, very hardworking, versatile kid. And you can do a lot with those guys.
Well, here's my question for you, Simon, because you mentioned that. You actually mentioned this earlier on WhatsApp. We were talking about that Ravens game, and I think we initially were talking about the pass rushers that the Ravens had. And then the talk turned over to their offensive tackles and offensive linemen. They got Ronnie Stanley, and they've got Orlando Brown Jr., and they've got,
Marshall Yanda,
Marshall Yanda. So Jerome Baker has to blitz or has to rush the passer from the outside, and there's Ronnie Stanley. Does he give Ronnie Stanley a hard time even, or does, you know, is it a total wash? Does he give Orlando Brown a hard time, or is it a total wash?
I think he'd struggle because, you know, we're always biased and we'd say Tunsil was better. I know Ravens fans would say Stanley's better, but you're essentially looking at comparable left tackles. Yes. And if that's the case, when you think that the only person that managed to get a sack on Laramie Tunsil last year was Yannick Ngakoue, you know, and that was essentially because Laramie took a sort of a hard step a little bit too far outside. But you look at the players that he went up against, you know, Jerry Hughes twice. We just talked about the kid from New England who went to Detroit. You talk about the cat up at Houston. Yeah, Khalil Mack. You look at the kid at Houston, the former first overall pick. You know, and he dominated every single one of them. Stanley is in that caliber. I think it's a stretch to think that, you know, Jerome Baker's necessarily going to line up and beat Ronnie Stanley. But I wonder whether or not, you know, inside blitzes, for example, I think that's where you could, you know, this is going up against what Matt Skura and who's the other guard opposite? Is Alex Lewis or Ben Powers, the kid they got from Oklahoma, they drafted from Oklahoma. You know, that's where you're potentially looking at targeting, you know, I think Baker. I think to say to him, you know, you take on one of the best young left tackles in football and see if you can get to Lamar Jackson. I think that's an uphill task, even for somebody that we like a lot as Jerome Baker. What do you think?
Well, I think one of the reasons that I asked that is just if you look at the way New England uses their – I mean, their two primary linebackers really are Kyle Van Noy and Donta Hightower.
Yeah.
And if you look at how they've used those guys and you track where they're lining up and what they're doing, those guys are rushing from the outside a lot. And you see, I mean, you can see it in some of their playbooks. And I think there's a Twitter guy named James Light who does a really great job of bringing up some of the pages from the New England playbook and analyzing it. And you see why they do it, you know, how those two, the Mac and Buck linebackers end up in those roles. But, you know, Donta Hightower, if you look at him and what he's doing and where he's lining up, he's on the outside a lot. And so, you know, that's what you have to look at with Jerome Baker. Is he going to be able to do that? And I don't know, because, you know, I'm just looking at it right now, and Donta Hightower was lining up and rushing from the outside, like, you know, 400 snaps last year, and including like over like 240 snaps in pass rush. And that, so that's not blitzing over the middle, you know, that's not, going against Mascara or somebody like that. So, you know, that's the key. We'll find out. I wouldn't have optimism about it because he's ultimately he's six one and you know, if that, and by the time the season gets done, he might be 220 pounds or 200, even 215 again or something like that. Who knows? So we'll see.
Now, as far as the secondary, this was a unit that we were pretty high on going into the season last year. And then, you know, I had a little powwow with Matt Burke, and he famously told me that we have five, but we don't have six. And we all know who the five are.
Yeah.
Do we have four, but we don't have five now this year, Simon?
I mean, I think that corner position opposite Xavier Howard is wide open. I don't think Eric Rowe did a great deal to prove that he was the guy in minicamp. You know, I think we've talked about this before, and it looks like he's going to start on the PUP. Cordray Tanksley, to me, doesn't make the roster. I think he's in a real battle to make the roster. I mean, I'm going to be looking at the three young kids, you know, the two kids that we were talked a bit about last season who continued to impress us, who were Cornell Armstrong and Jalen Davis, who were thrown a little bit into the fire. They're going to get their chance. And then the kid that was the most impressive, certainly of the kind of the younger guys, was a kid that Flores had in New England. And that's Jamal Wiltz, the corner out of Iowa State. He went undrafted, and then the Eagles had him in 17. The Patriots had him.
And had his moments in minicamp.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this is the kid that, you know, they're going to try and give, you know, a little bit of, I mean, he's 5'11". So, you know, but to me, there's not a guy opposite Howard. And then that brings in the question, do you put Fitzpatrick out there and do you move McCain back to slot corner? Because it feels to me like Minka is going to be the slot guy. You're going to move him about a bit, but that's where he's going to play because that's where he plays best. And it feels like if they're going to do that, that whole kind of spring exhibition of putting McCain at free safety feels like a complete waste of time.
Yeah.
Why would you do that if you didn't have a plan for corner? You know, but they also have to know that Rowe, you know, has been spotty in his career. He's been injured in his career. And they can't have thought that they don't have a backup plan. So it would not surprise me to see one of those three young guys, you know, try and battle it out and potentially win the job because somebody's got to take it. And I'm not sold that it's going to be Eric Rowe.
Yeah, and I think they just signed today. They just signed Tyler Patman.
They did.
Who's a veteran corner. I believe he's a veteran slot corner in particular. And so I think that you look at that and that's kind of, you mentioned Bobby McCain. Are they just gonna put him back a slot because out of need or, you know, for whatever reason? And I think you signed a Tyler Patman specifically so you don't have to. I think that they're committed to this Bobby McCain, and I'll talk about that however you want me to later because I don't have a very good opinion about it. This Bobby McCain, a free safety thing. They're committed to it. They're going with it. I think you're exactly right with that corner position opposite Xavier Howard. It is, you know, kind of a open competition, but slash no man's land. I'm not sure anybody on this roster can step up and take that spot. Ultimately, it's going to be somebody else in the future. I think Eric Rowe, you know, he's going to try it, but I didn't, when I look back at what he did in New England on tape, when he did play, I wasn't all that impressed. And Cornell Armstrong,
terrible. Eric Rowe, let's call it like it is. Eric Rowe was a bad football player last year.
Yeah, well,
he was an injured football player last year.
There was a lot of injuries. So
interesting. The Dolphins worked out a former first round pick today. Do you know who it was? They worked out Patman as well and signed him. They also worked out a former first round pick. Any guesses?
I didn't hear that.
Tim Tebow.
I've literally just got
that. Tim Tebow.
Matt Elam.
Oh, did they really?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Interesting.
The Ravens safety, who most recently I think was playing in the XFL showcase a couple of weeks ago.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I hold out hope for Cornell Armstrong, to be honest with you guys. Jalen Davis really strikes me as a slot specialist, and I don't think he'll ever get out of being a slot
specialist. Sticky guy, Jalen Davis. A guy's all around the ball.
Yes. So
but slot guys thrive in this defense, in this defensive approach. They use a lot of them.
But if there's a guy that I'm holding out hope for, and I do agree with you, this descent from Cordarea Tankersley has been spectacular. It really has been. Yeah. And it really started last year in training camp. It started
Carolina and starting and then in Carolina in preseason.
Yeah. And it wasn't
a thing
either. It's more of a mental thing with Cordarea Tankersley.
Armstrong had a lot of experience at Southern Miss, on and off the field, team captain, highly respected. Mm-hmm. He ran a 4.43, had a 39 or 40 inch vertical. This was a well liked, well developed, intelligent kid.
I think he's very aggressive against the run and in
field. Yeah, I do too.
He's got that physical nature to him, and that's a good start. So,
absolutely hardworking kid.
On the way out here, I'll ask you guys a few questions. I'll start with you, Simon. Rashad Jones, does he play the season with the Miami Dolphins?
Feels like he and Coach Flores have repaired whatever. That feels like there's a strong sense of respect. I spoke to Dave Hyde a while back, and it feels like some bridges have been mended. So I suspect he probably does. Whether he lasts injury-wise remains to be seen, but I think he'll be on the roster if that's what you're asking.
I think that was out of necessity. I don't think anybody's taking him. So no, I think they had to mend fences there.
And so, one last thing before we get out of here, and I'll start with you, Chris. Minkah Fitzpatrick, where does he play this year? And then where should he play?
Well, Minkah Fitzpatrick, he's going to play slot this year. And so New England in their approach, they had two different guys playing free safety, deep safety. And that was Daron Harmon, who was more of a part-time player, probably like a 50 to 60% player. He played almost exclusively free safety. But then they also had Devin McCourty, who was a half free safety and a half slot guy. So what we're still trying to figure out, and we'll have to see, is whether Minkah Fitzpatrick, in addition to his slot duties, which we know because that's what made him famous at Alabama. I always want these coaches to play the players where they got famous. So that's good. He's going to be in the slot. Is he also going to pull back and do some deep safety like Devin McCourty did? Because, yes, even though Bobby McCain is a free safety and it looks like that's just full-time commitment now, that doesn't mean he's a 1,000 snaps guy. He could be more like a Daron Harmon who comes on the field 50 to 60% of the time and is a free safety specialist that way, and that could leave room for Minkah Fitzpatrick filling like a Devin McCourty. But then the other possibility is that maybe Minkah Fitzpatrick is just more like the Pat Chung in this defense, and that's an extremely important player in New England's defense. So that could very well be the case. I think that's an excellent question. We're really just going to have to find out as we go. But the one that I talked about, I alluded to it before. I don't have very good optimism or opinions about Bobby McCain moving back into deep center because he is a 5'9" player. He did rank number 96 out of 133 at his position in his missed tackle efficiency last year. So he wasn't a reliable tackler really last year, even as a corner, as a slot corner. He's a career slot corner. I mean, this is what he's been his whole Miami Dolphins career. He was a corner exclusively back in college. So he's learning a whole different game. I mean, when you got that much green in front of you, it's a whole different game. You're reading your keys. You're trying to get your angles just right. And I don't know that I see him being an effective last line of defense against the big pass and
the
big run.
I know he can't be an effective last line of defense because that's all he's shown his entire career. He's always been terrible vertically, always. So
yeah, well, and that's the point.
They're obviously seeing something different than what we have seen since Bobby McCain suited up for us for the first time.
It strikes me as a mistake if you're really, I mean, I don't think they're fully committed to win. And not that they're trying to tank or anything. I think that they're making moves that are clearly with the future in sight. yeah, and not so much, you know, not so much the present. And this is one of those moves that were, if you really, really, really cared about wins right now, like this was your season to go to the playoffs, I don't think you make this move with Bobby McCain at free safety. I think they're taking advantage of some things right now to and doing that. And it's just because they're having a hard time making everybody fit and getting Minkah Fitzpatrick. You know, he's the guy. He's the guy that they want to make sure they get into the right positions. And Bobby McCain is sort of, you know, ending up as sort of a remainder on that equation. And I think that as a free safety, this is a good way where this is a good way to end up. You know, 75 out of 80 plays, your defense played pretty well. And then, you know, the other five plays, you still lost the game by a lot because they scored 30 points on you. And that's what I think. That's what I think could happen with an unreliable last line of defense like that. And so I don't know how well that's going to work. But, you know, convenient from our standpoint, if you are one of those guys that's like, you know, Tua Tagovailoa or bust at number one overall, it could work into that, you know, inadvertently.
Yeah. All right. On the way out, very quickly, Simon, give me one camp battle you want to see.
You want to see somebody emerge. Well, I mean, I think for me, there's three. Quarterback between Fitzpatrick and Rosen. And then on both lines, you've got to see guys emerge.
All right, Chris.
I think it's the right tackle spot, whether it's going to be Jesse Davis or Jordan Mills, because of all the guys that I named that they're going to be facing on that right side this year, it'll affect so much. I mean, I like these wide receivers like you do, but if the quarterbacks can never get it to them with good timing, and if the quarterbacks kind of suck anyway, then it's wasted for all. It's wasted for Kenyon Drake. It's wasted for Kalen Ballage, who catches the ball pretty well or caught it pretty well in college.
Yeah.
So it's that right tackle spot.
Yeah, obviously for me it's the quarterbacks, of course, but the one that I'm really, really interested in is I want to see who gets the snaps at the tight end position. All right, that's it. There is no more. Next week, you know, we'll actually be in camp and I'll have reports from there. But till then.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.